and welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My name is Brian Dinovellis, and what a treat we have for you on this episode. I've been a big fan of this brother combo when they burst onto the podcast scene a few years ago. They are knowledgeable, they're passionate, they're opinionated. Best of all, they don't always agree, and why should they agree? They're brothers. They have pulled up a bar stool. They have dusted off their microphones. They are none other than Tyler and Ryan Cassidy from Big East Barroom. Guys, great to see you.
Thank you so much for having us, Brian. This is my first podcast since the end of last season. I took it out just for you because I couldn't miss this. Appreciate you having us on.
Yeah, Brian, can't say thank you enough. It felt like old times when I saw the Zoom call come up and Ryan on the other end and some technical difficulties. So it felt like we're just old times, you know.
I love it. I love what would a podcast be without technical difficulty, right?
Absolutely.
So guys, just, you know, full disclosure for the fans out there listening, I said I'm a big fan and I'm just going to be honest. I've never said this publicly, but these two guys are my social media BFFs. Like, I feel like they're my closest guys. We've never met in person. We've never seen each other in person, but yet we have each other's cell numbers. We text during games. And I can't say that about any other social media friend. So I feel like we're BFFs. Do you agree?
I should have asked off on the record. Are you going to be at the Seton Hall Georgetown game in February?
That's a good question. Tyler, are you?
Me and Ryan will be making our Prudential Center first appearance. So I got Ryan tickets for Christmas because he's been so haul in this year.
I love it.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Then you know what? I'm going to be there. So let me know where you're sitting and we'll definitely hook up before the game. All right.
Absolutely. Sounds great.
Awesome. So let's begin with the haul. Ryan, you're haul in. Big surprise. You know, this afternoon, the AP poll comes out. Seton Hall cracks the top 25 for the first time in 4 years, January of 2022. They're number 25. Deserved or not?
Yeah, I think deserved. Where are they? 14-2. They've got two losses on the season. They've started off Big East play, rattling off four wins. Well, yeah, 4-1. They just lost that game to Villanova, which was kind of a stinker. But, I mean, I think they've pretty much established themselves as the second-best team in the Big East. Anytime you're the second-best team in a power conference, I say rank them. It's pretty much been a dream season for Shaheen Holloway and a nightmare season for all the haters who had a lot to say about him last year in one bad season for what is a terrific basketball coach, a guy who could coach basketball with his eyes closed. Everybody has one bad year. There's a lot of overreactions we saw.
Yeah, I think people forgot. This is the same coach who took a St. Peter's team to the Elite Eight, you know, and beat Purdue and beat Kentucky. So he didn't forget how to coach just because he had a bad season. He had to learn how to recruit. I'm going to put it that way.
Yeah, and he had missed on a couple guys the year prior. And I know you were talking about how, you know, he went into this offseason, he really wanted Bud Clark, and he landed Bud Clark. He was able to get the guys who were at the top of his list. But not only did he take St. Peter's to the Elite Eight, he had finished fourth in the Big East the year prior in what I believe we all think should have been an NCAA tournament team. He was snubbed. They feel terrible for those kids who didn't get the chance to play in it. It wasn't a fluke situation where he had one good run. He's been a very good basketball coach everywhere he's gone. And I'm very happy for him. I think he's a great representation of the university and he's a culture guy and he does stuff the right way. And I couldn't be happier for him.
Yeah. I think just pointing out like the players that he brought in, I think that is it. He's getting guys that are, you know, in the mud kind of guys. Like, I mean, if you remember Dre Davis, Jaden Bediaku, and, you know, Kadari Richmond had his best season when he was at Seton Hall under Shaw and, you know, those guys. And yeah, I think last year he missed. I think he might have, if he admitted it, I think he probably didn't vet some of those guys. I don't want to call anyone out. The personalities he didn't get to line up the way that these guys do. I mean, I was skeptical. You bring in Bud Clark, 5'10", coming from a lower conference, and he comes in and he's just an absolute dog in there. I mean, AJ Stat McCray, you can't say enough good things about them. So I think for Shaw, and this says so much about him, he needs to recruit personalities. And I think that's what he got with this team. I think he recruited the personalities, and now he's, seeing the dividends because he can coach anyone in basketball. I think he might be able to win a couple games with me out there. But the personalities, and he didn't miss this year at all, and he's showing what he can do.
Listen, it's not easy. There's a lot of hit and misses, and you need a special, it takes a special personality to play for Shaheen Holloway, and he has really groomed some terrific point guards over the years and helped mold them, when he was an assistant coach, and he helped get guys like Isaiah Whitehead and guys like Quincy McKnight grabbed him from Sacred Heart and helped mold these guys as an assistant. Is Bud Clark the key player on this team, the most indispensable player?
Yeah, I think so. And he doesn't always show up in the box score, everything he does, but the way he's able to control the pace of games, the way that he, prevents turnovers, which we didn't see so much last year because they didn't have a true point guard. When you're able to give Bud Clark the ball every time up the floor, he's not turning the ball over, he controls the pace. And then he just has a knack for making plays in big moments when the team needs it. You look at the end of the Creighton game, and I think he forced like four turnovers in the final 5 minutes. Or something like that. He only got credit for two steals, I think, but he forced more turnovers than that. He's kind of like the heartbeat of the team, and if you're box score watching, you may not realize how important he is, but like, he's legit.
Tyler,
Yeah,
you saw him in person against Georgetown.
the kid. I mean, the kid's unflappable. He's just he's getting to his spot every single time. And I would maybe I'm coming off a little bit. What's the word? Overreactionary after watching him. Maybe one Big East point guard I'd rather have over Bud Clark right now. Might say something about the Big East as well. I mean, there's problems, but maybe I can make an argument for Silas Demery. I can make a kid from Lewis or argument for a Lewis from Villanova. And after
Yeah.
that, I can tell you right now, Rick Pitino would love to have Bud Clark running point guard at St. John's. I
Yeah.
can tell you right now that Creighton would probably love to have Bud Clark running point guard at Creighton. I mean, Marquette obviously would love that. I mean, I cannot believe the player that he is, and I can't. Maybe I'll say poo-poo to the guys who let him go 3 years in a lower major. I don't know how he did because this kid is unreal.
It's so hard, right? It's so hard to really evaluate and there's a guy in the tri-state for Rutgers, Tariq Francis, and people question his size coming out of NJIT. And I mean, he's averaging, 20, 22 points, 24 points in his last six games. So he's a definite Big Ten player. I think you hit upon the two, Tyler. I think of Caden Lewis, I would put him number one in terms of point guards, and his ceiling is obviously the highest. And I think, Bud Clark, Silas Demery, I don't think you could do wrong with either one of those.
But I don't think that Shaw would trade his senior point guard for the freshman point guard. So
No.
I just I mean I love Caden Lewis and we're splitting hairs here. But I mean down the stretch, do I trust a senior or do I trust a freshman? And I think I'd probably go with Bud Clark over almost everyone.
I want to say he's a junior. I think
Is
he
he?
has one. Yeah, I think he has one more year after this, but you could look that up, I'm pretty sure. But all right, so one more.
Yep, one more. This is his third year of college.
Okay. So guys, can defense take this team so far? Sooner or later, you worry about their offense and knocking down threes, but can defense carry them to the NCAA tournament?
Well, I don't know. I got a little bit concerned with their defense recently. I think that Marquette game, the defense wasn't great against Villanova. I didn't think the defense was terrific, and they kind of got bailed out a few times. I think we haven't seen the best version of their defense, which you can say is a positive thing considering they're 14-2, and I think they can continue to get better if the level of effort and intensity is more consistent over the course of the game. But I think that's why they've needed a few late game heroics recently is just a little slow to the ball a few times, just rotations a little bit slow, a little bit lazy until the game gets really close at the end, and then they're dialing it up, and Bud Clark is, taking the ball out of Creighton's hands 3 times in a row, and all these things. So, it's a nice balance so far. They've scored, they scored 73 points on Marquette, they scored 72 on Providence, 76 on Georgetown. So, I think it's more balanced than some of his other teams, which were so defensive reliant.
Yeah, and in terms of the NCAA tournament, six teams left that they play with sub 100 KenPom ratings. I mean, you run up now. You're talking about 10 Big East wins already. If you can win those games, I think eventually they stack enough wins where it's going to be it's going to be impossible to leave him out. But we've watched people leave Seton Hall out of the tournament before
Yes,
recently.
at 13-7 in the Big East, which was insane. So
Terrible.
all right, let's talk to you talk about UConn now. Before we get to the UConn Seton Hall matchup on Tuesday, here's a statement. This is a Final Four team, but not a national championship team. Agree or disagree?
I hard disagree. I don't know. I think that this team at this point is better than the team 3 years ago with the Joey Calcaterra team. You got to remember, though, that's a little caveat that that UConn team lost like five out of six games at a certain stretch. This UConn team has the depth that that team had. It has the, I think, more balanced scoring than that team had. And the defense right now is locked in better than that team was at this point. And Hurley has his best teams during this playing the best basketball in February and March.
Who identifies that team by Joey Calcaterra? Like the second guy off the bench is Howard. All right.
I should just say Andre and Hawkins and Sonogo. But Joey Calcaterra played 1 year there.
Well, we
I think
certainly
that
knew which team he was talking about. If he said Cam Spencer, we would have known the 2014 team.
I think that the opposite point of view is that year there was the competition in the Big East was so tough. I mean, that was the year Tyler Kolick won Big East Player of the Year for Marquette. That was the year Providence. They had Bryce Hopkins was all Big East that year, right? What did you have? Five teams that made the NCAA tournament.
Creighton,
Creighton was
Creighton
terrific.
had, oh my God. I mean, they still had who's the big guy I'm thinking of?
They had Kalkbrenner,
Bunker.
Nemhard,
Yes.
all of them. So
All of
this
them. UConn team's not going to
Skyerman.
be as battle tested when they get to the NCAA tournament as that team was, where that team just kept getting better over the course of the year. You're absolutely right. I don't know, Brian. I want to hear why you think it's not a national title contender.
Because they don't have the killer instinct, okay? And I'm going to take a page out of Dan Hurley's book. And it's not just that, Tyler. And I want you, because you just laughed at me. They're not a great free throw
Even I'm
shooting
happy to
team,
be clear.
and I don't think they're a great 3-point shooting team either. They can hit threes, but they're very streaky. We've seen them hit 13 threes. We've seen them hit five threes against Marquette. So they're very inconsistent with their shooting. And they haven't put teams away or buried them.
But that hasn't come back to bite them in any of these games. And I don't, the 3-point shooting, I have. Silas Demery shot 42%, I think, last year. Or no, not 42%. Silas Demery shot well for Georgia. Solo Ball is much more the player he was last year, I think, shooting wise, than he is the 28% shooter he is this year. Alex Karabin has proven he's a 3-point shooter. Braylon Mullins, I don't think any of us are questioning how good of a 3-point shooter he is. So I think that it's more a weird thing that's going on that Solo Ball. If Solo Ball was shooting 40% from three, I think it would look a lot and sound a lot different. And we kind of expect Solo Ball to rebound and go back to, that kind of player. In terms of the killer instinct, in terms of the metrics, it hurts. But like when they beat DePaul by 12 instead of 22 because they subbed their starters out, I don't know. That doesn't really, that part doesn't scare me, but we'll see. The metrics are normally right and they're a lot closer than, the eye test.
Okay, I'm okay. The DePaul game, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about, they had a lead against Arizona. I'm talking about, and I know they had two starters out, but they had a lead late in that game. I'm talking about, Florida not being able to put them away. There were games this year where you just feel like Marquette was hanging around for way too long. And I know it was a ho-hum game, and Marquette is obviously, they're way down. I would just like to see, I think we haven't seen UConn's best basketball.
I think that's a really positive thing for UConn that they're 16-1 and haven't seen their best basketball. I mean, we could be talking about a 20-0 team. I listen, saying that UConn's a Final Four versus national championship, we're both splitting hairs there because that means they have a chance. We've seen San Diego State make a championship game recently. I mean,
True.
anything can happen.
That is
So
true.
I guess my question would be, when you say they don't have a killer instinct, how much of that comes down specifically to Alex Karabin? Because in the big moments, Dan Hurley's going to Alex Karabin. He's running set plays to try to get him an open look. And at the end of the day, is it his responsibility to put these guys away?
So you're saying he doesn't have that cutthroat personality
Has he not?
that maybe a Cam Spencer did, that maybe a
Right.
Tristan Newton did,
Has he not shown
and
up in
certainly
moments?
Donovan Clingan did.
Yeah.
It could be personalities. Tyler's thinking, he's mulling it. It could be personalities. Look, it's very good. Could they win a national championship? We'll tell. I mean, I didn't think Wisconsin would beat Michigan at home when they were steamrolling teams. And like Tyler said, if you get to the Final Four, anyone can win, right? That's for sure. All right. So, any other weaknesses in this team? I mean, I mentioned free throw shooting. I mentioned 3-point shooting.
I mean, I'm still Terrace Reed's defense. I love Terrace Reed. I've really, watched. There's always a clip that somebody says that Terrace Reed is not a Big East caliber basketball player that I always think about when he's scoring 20 and 10. I don't know even know who I can attribute that to. And I've watched him come a long way. He sometimes gets himself in some bad positions, and if he gets into foul trouble, I like Riba. I think he's earned some really good experience here, especially when Terrace Reed missed some games. But anytime you have a freshman center coming in, there's a reason even Donovan Clingan played 8 minutes a game or 12 minutes a game as a freshman. So my biggest concern would be Reed getting in foul trouble or getting exposed in the pick and roll, because he's sometimes still a little bit, he can be a little bit slow-footed in that situation.
I think that's fair. Braylon Mullins, I mean, we're all high on him. Do you compare him to anybody? Any UConn great with that quick release?
Is there a freshman we've seen come into Big East in the last 8 years, 10 years, with this level of shot making? I mean, usually shot making is the last thing that comes to basketball players, right? It's reps. It's, you get into the NBA, you're shooting 8 hours a day, and that's when you get. I mean, he hit shots. It's like, I can see why the NBA is really interested in him, because if you can get him in a weight room,
Yeah.
forget about it.
I'd love to see him stay one more year because of that.
But I do think if when they're in the NCAA tournament, if he's playing 41 minutes a game like he did against Providence in overtime, they're going to draw game plans to isolate him and attack him on defense, because he's a small guy right now.
How great was it that they were running sets for him in overtime, and had the guts to let the fresh, what do you have, 8 points in overtime, something like that, two threes and a two.
The kid is the one thing about him is he is unflappable. He does not look ever too scared for the moment. I mean, the Amp is one of the best environments you can play in, and he was overtime just chucking threes from almost the logo. That one catch and shoot from the top of the key. I do think sometimes the team takes on their personality, their coach, who also does not shy away from those moments. So, I think Braylon Mullins, yes, one more year of Braylon Mullins, I think would be really scary. I do not think we will get that.
If you're mocked in the first round, you should go. God forbid, a Justin Moore situation happens
And
to you.
where, though? I mean, he could still make a million at UConn. I mean, there's
It's
no way
different.
UConn's getting rid of. There's no way they're letting him go.
Yeah. It's different than it used to be. It's at least more enticing, but I mean, I think Liam McNeely has a guaranteed contract, and that's the low end of what you're looking at probably for Braylon Mullins.
Right. Yeah. I think he's going to be a better pro
I do too.
than McNeely.
Give him 3 years. We'll be hearing him on ESPN like once a week.
Sure. Yeah. Love him. Can't say enough good things about him. All right, guys. The Rock, Tuesday night, two ranked teams, number 25 Seton Hall, number 3 UConn. This is going, for me, it's must see TV. I know for you guys, it's enticing, because Seton Hall, for some strange reason, has beaten UConn four straight times at The Rock. Dan Hurley, as soon as that UConn bus comes over the border, I think it's his kryptonite. Something happens. I get it. One time he was stuck back home due to COVID, but strange things have happened. Do you expect this game to be anything less than what we've seen the last four matchups at the Prudential Center?
Well, we had talked about this, you and I, Brian, and you had talked about he just seems more, just a little different on the sidelines when he's in New Jersey, when he's playing against Seton Hall. Is that's something you still believe, that he acts differently?
When I talked to him in my pod earlier this year, he bit his tongue. He wanted to say something, but he didn't. And maybe from UConn fans, there's this perception that UConn is that Seton Hall has gotten lucky, whether it was Donovan Clingan, going out 3 minutes into the second half, whether it was, and Seton Hall was winning the game at the time, whether it was Kadari Richmond, I think he went for 17 straight points on one drive after another. He was on fire that night. I mean, certainly the one game was last year. Seton Hall had no business. The worst Seton Hall team ever beating UConn, one of their two Big East wins. I think that was a fluke. The other three, I don't know. I think he wants to win so bad. There is no question in my mind. He wants to win so bad. And maybe he puts a little too much pressure on himself or coaches differently. I don't know. What do you guys see?
I'm just gonna tell you, you can go, but they committed 16 turnovers in the game last year to that Seton Hall team. That was the best we saw their defense all year. So maybe, Seton Hall kids get up to play a, UConn, blue blood, a little bit of extra energy from them too. But go ahead, Ty.
Yeah, Bri, I think after watching the Hurley documentary on ESPN, I think you're on the money. He's a very, say what you want about Hurley, and I've heard it all, and that's not what we're doing right now. He's very reflective in everything he does. He's very, so
Fantastic.
I'm guessing when he goes to Seton Hall, he's reflecting on the trials and tribulations he went through as a human being there. I know that sounds deep for a basketball game, but and then I think part of it is he. I never really see him acting ridiculous at Seton Hall. I think he doesn't want to come off as too much of a jerk at Seton Hall, like he does in some other places, like Maui and places like that. But I do think, yeah, he wants, do it for me, do it for me. I want this game. I want this game. I want to show them that I'm not, the kid who couldn't handle, the pressure one year. I want to show them. I think that's what makes Dan Hurley great, is he has that chip on his shoulder. And maybe in some way at Seton Hall is like his kryptonite. It's just that chip overwhelms him. And but I do think it, the way we've seen Hurley over the last few years, I think it's fair to say that he, does probably get very introspective at the, at the arena, and think about really what's going on.
We're going to see. We're going to see. Obviously, they have the edge. They're favored by 5.5 points. Keys for UConn to win this game.
Well, I think UConn is for sure the more talented basketball team in terms of players, with the level of recruits that UConn gets. So it's all about, not letting the environment affect them, right? I don't know how loud the Prudential Center is going to be. It's not always the loudest arena, but when UConn's in town,
Yeah.
how.
The students are back. It'll be loud.
Okay. And, so you don't let the atmosphere affect you. You don't want, Bud Clark to affect you. You don't want to get sped up and start creating turnovers and mistakes like they did last year at Seton Hall. If you're able to play your game and, kind of bring your will into the game, slow it down, because, Hurley loves to run his set plays and, stuff like that. I think that they win. I think Seton Hall wants to make this an intense, crazy, crowd is going crazy kind of game.
Turn them over. I think ball security, Tyler.
Yeah, Hurley's quotes today are talking about how that Seton Hall is the hardest playing team in the country, and that's normally his team. I think Hurley's going to use tomorrow as a message and say, look at what they're doing, and they're not full of five stars like we are, and look at what they're getting out of their team. So I think as dumb as it is, I think the hardest playing team might win tomorrow. I think, if Seton Hall really muddies this game up, like Ryan's saying, and really makes this an ugly rock fight that's played in the 50s or low 60s, they have an excellent chance of winning. This is a little bit of a chance for UConn to prove they're not just the pretty boys of the Big East, that they need to go in there and they need to win a rock fight,
Yeah.
where they haven't necessarily had to do that a lot.
I definitely think that we will not see, games in the 80s, this game in the 80s. It could be first one of 70. It's a game in recent years where turnovers, fast break points, and rebounding have come into play. You're talking about the two best defensive teams in the Big East. Two of the top 10 KenPom defenses in the country. I think Seton Hall's ninth in defensive efficiency, UConn's fifth. So, and maybe if one team gets hot from three, that could be a difference.
I didn't realize Seton Hall's defensive metrics were that good. That makes my earlier point. Maybe I need to bring back my earlier point about their defense not performing as well as I thought.
No, it does. And listen, they turn you over. If Villanova had tremendous ball security against them, and Villanova makes threes, and I think a team that can hold on to the ball and hit threes against Seton Hall, That's the secret. That's the secret.
Brad, give me an X factor for Seton Hall, a player for Seton Hall that needs to play well, other than Bud Clark tomorrow.
All right, and then you give me one for UConn.
Sounds good.
All right. Interesting. All right. Even though he's a starter, AJ Staton-McRae to me is an X factor in this game. He's been virtually invisible the past three or four games. His shot isn't there, and he hasn't played in key stretches down the stretch. He's been benched in favor of Tawan Simpkins. So if AJ Staton-McRae can hit a couple threes and get his confidence there, I think he's an X factor in this game. And I'll go with that. UConn?
Give me solo ball. The kid has been,
He's their
cold. I
leading
know
scorer. He's their leading
he.
scorer.
Okay, because the more
Cheating.
boring answer is, how about just give me Alex Caravan in a crazy environment tomorrow, the steady hand that comes in and who's done it three different times, lost all three games. And Caravan has said multiple times and in other games when he wins a game, when he beat Kansas this year, he said, I did this for the team 2 years ago. I
That's
think
right.
Alex Karabin is also very reflective, like his head coach. And I
Right.
think he might walk in there and say that the team that won 2 years ago, that lost only three games in the regular season, but lost to Seton Hall, that one of the stains on their resume of almost a perfect season, almost a perfect team, was losing to Seton Hall. And Alex Karabin might be, really going out for blood tomorrow and saying, I have a chance to avenge them.
I'll take that. And you know what? He had an awful shooting game 2 years ago when Klingon went down. I don't know what his stats were, but it was not a good shooting game. And okay, you know what? We chose two stars, but two guys who we want to see show up and do something for their teams. Okay, St. John's, guys. Are they back on track after that loss to Providence? Is St. John's, should we look at them as a top 25 team again, or they need more to do?
So since they lost to Providence in kind of choking fashion, respectfully, they've beaten Butler and they've beaten Creighton. They kind of blew both of them out, though. I mean, they beat them away from home. I don't know, Brad. The problem with St. John's, and I don't want to get on a soapbox and go on a whole thing here, is
Go ahead.
you put together 12 transfers every year. Some years it's going to hit, some games it's going to hit, and sometimes it won't, and sometimes it'll mesh later in the year, and sometimes it won't mesh later in the year, and it's just too unpredictable when you're doing it. So I mean, I want to sit here and give you a take and whatever, but like, if St. John's comes out and looks disconnected for the next three games, are we going to be shocked? No, because that's what they look like for the beginning of the season. If they figured it out, will I be shocked that Rick Pitino got a bunch of guys to mesh that, had never probably said hi to each other before 6 months ago? No, but it's so unpredictable, and this is my problem with doing it the way that he's doing it.
Listen, he's got a lot of money, and I think it's safe to say we're not saying anything that people don't already know. They were a tremendous, tremendous defensive team last year, number two in the country behind Houston, and they couldn't score. So it's just like, you have a disciplinary coach and then you hire the country club coach, right? You go to the opposite. So he completely went for all these scores. But he forgot the most important piece because he said it was positionless and we're going to play positionless basketball. Can Ian Jackson or Dylan Darling become true point guards and lead St. John's to a Sweet 16? That is the million-dollar question to me.
I love your point about the overcorrection, because then if you even go a year back further, that was the year of we have no lateral quickness. So in the offseason that year, he goes and gets all these guys. I mean, he puts together the best defense in the Big East in the last 15 years, according to the metrics, but nobody could score. Well, now he doesn't have any scores, so he says, forget all the defensive guys. I only want scores.
Yes.
So he's overcorrected every year he's been at St. John's, in my opinion. I think that your question's exactly right. Ian Jackson's been underwhelming. Just going to point out, in order to beat Creighton, they ended up getting 17 points on 5 of 8 from 3 from Lefteris Liotopoulos. I don't
Yes.
know if that's,
Career night.
I'm not sure that's replicable. So it was a close game, and then they pulled away. They went on like a 20 to something run at one point. I was not impressed. I haven't watched a ton of St. John's basketball. I watched the end of the Providence game, and Stephon Vaux was putting Bryce Hopkins on the floor. So,
How disappointing has Hopkins been? I know I've listened to your podcast, right? And I felt the same way. This was a guy at Providence who was a Big East Player of the Year candidate for 2 straight years. Injuries have, slowed him down, not the same player. What's wrong with him, or is this the best we're going to see?
it's hard to tell. I don't think it's an effort thing at all. I mean, this is a kid who's fought his way back. I don't know. These are catastrophic injury. That's a catastrophic injury, tearing your ACL, that I sometimes think we kind of as we see in athletes and we're like, oh, they'll be back next year. Okay, that's a 10-month injury. It doesn't always work that way. He's still playing ridiculously physical down there. He's still rebounding the ball. He was never the best shooter. They kind of captured lightning in a bottle with Carter and Hopkins shooting that year,
Oh, yeah.
or Hopkins the year before, and then Carter the next year. So I hope for Bryce Hopkins' sake that he is able to make a full comeback and maybe sign a G League contract and prove that he can still be that Big East Player of the Year candidate he's been in the past. But I just don't know if physically, it seemed like physically there's probably more going on than just the torn ACL last year. So that would be my guess.
He looks a step slow to me.
Okay, I'll buy that. I mean, I saw an extremely motivated Bryce Hopkins against Butler after he came out of the foul trouble, the 2 fouls in the first half. He came out in the second half on fire, and he was the catalyst that, helped them pull away and win that game. You never know with St. John's who is going to show up on any given night. We saw all the articles about Ruben Pray, and oh, we want to see more. He's the key. He's the X factor. We want to see more Ruben Pray with Zubi and out there together. And then he lays a goose egg against Creighton, and that's when Lefty showed up. So, I guess in some ways that's what makes St. John's dangerous, but so unpredictable that Ozaiah Sellers can go for 16. Ozaiah Sellers can go 0 for 6. You don't know who's showing up except for Zubi. He is the
I was
one
going to say,
constant.
Brian, if only they had been able to return the Big East Player of the Year. I mean, then you would know who was going to show up, don't you think?
Boy, if we could go back to the huddle in that NCAA tournament game when RJ Lewis got benched and everything turned from that moment on.
Yes. Nothing
Brian,
has been the same.
I don't know if we have time, but were you did you think he made the right call benching him in that moment?
I don't really listen. He said the answer is yes. Okay. The answer is yes, and I'm not going to, go against what he said. And I know a lot of people are like, listen, no matter what, John Starks, right? He brought up John Starks and he brought up poor shooting games. I think there was something more to it than just he was having a bad shooting night. Because you know as well as I do, you ride your stars, even if they're, 1 for 11, you feel like they're gonna have the next shot. You don't bench Braylon Mullins for having a bad shooting night, solo ball. Make the next one, Alex Caravan. There was something more there. That's why I'm saying he made the right decision.
I think we'll find out soon what happened.
Interesting. Guys, let's go around the Big East. A little rapid fire. Tyler, let's start with Georgetown. You were there. What was that arena like against Seton Hall? And is Ed Cooley on the hot seat?
First of all, went to a game where they had the most advantageous positions, at 6 o'clock on a Saturday, and the kids were back on campus, allows everyone to be able to make it. I want to say, first of all, Capital One Arena gets a bad rap. Capital One Arena deserves a bad rap. I have never seen an arena that is less interested in basketball. There were, I think, two concession stands open while we were there. Lines like crazy, no merchandise being sold, and anything other than a pop-up table. They had no interest in basketball at the Capital One Arena. I will say, though, the student section showed up and showed up big time. I was really impressed with that. They were all the way back. I just think in an arena that big, the Washington Wizards arena, that you're going to really struggle with, making it look really full. I think if you compacted it a little more to like a college-sized arena, it would look pretty good. So, pros and cons, I thought the fans were good. I thought the arena kind of sucks.
The team?
They're so hit or miss. I mean, sometimes for stretches, KJ Lewis looks like the best player in the conference. Sometimes, their offense just disappears. Malik Mack needs to shoot better for that team to be good. And then the big man situation. First of all, I want to give like the most credit to Vince. I'm gonna mess this up, Rye. I always do. Vince Iwichukwu.
Yes, baby.
Rye says that's wrong every time, but
Sounds right to me.
but first of all, the most upbeat kid in the world for going through, heart surgery recently. The fact that he's the most upbeat person on the bench is incredible. And then second, his level of play, he's kind of forced Julius, I'll mess that last name up too, into a situation where Vince is coming for his minutes all the time. And he's a really good rim protector and lob threat. And I've really enjoyed watching Vince Iwichukwu, become a really serviceable player from being a backup at St. John's last year. So I thought they were better than they were. I think they're, or I thought they were better than this team. I thought they could compete for maybe a tournament spot, but I don't think they're as bad as they've looked the last 2 weeks. So I think they're not as good as I thought. They're not as bad as everyone thinks right now. I think they're probably in the middle around the seventh or eighth best team in the conference.
That puts them probably out of the NCAA tournament, and I'm sure you guys saw the tweet put out. I'm gonna quote him here. It was Postradamus mentioning and comparing Patrick Ewing's coaching record at Georgetown through 82 games was 46 and 36. Now I know the last couple of years were abysmal, but 46 and 36, Patrick Ewing's first 82 games, and Cooley's were the exact opposite, 36
36
and
and
46.
46.
So is Ed Cooley on the hot seat? Is he getting it done? You are what your record says you are, right?
But part of that is because Patrick Ewing tanked the whole program so bad at the end that when Ed Cooley took it over, he had two Big East wins. So it's, I mean, part of that is Patrick Ewing's legacy. I think that Ed Cooley's going to get another year. But at some point, he's going to have to put up results. Georgetown doesn't like to make moves quickly. We know this. They're not reactive. They take a lot of pride in their institution. They think they're different than other colleges. Whether you agree or not, that's how they feel and conduct themselves. So I do think that they are going to try to make this work with Ed. They've given him all the financial resources he could ask for. Supposedly, he doesn't use them all. Suppose is what we've heard. That he, is getting offered more NIL than he is spending. So maybe he will go out this offseason and actually spend all the money that he has at his disposal and put together a decent team next year.
Yeah, listen, there was Hoya paranoia back in the day. And there was not a meaner, nastier, more fierce program out there for years. And this program, there is no fear. Tyler, you were there, concessions weren't open. It's a dead, cavernous arena. Can they win there? I don't know. I listen, I think if you have the right mix of players in an NIL and you spend your money the right way, I think you can win anywhere.
I agree.
You know,
I agree.
Kevin Willard, my old buddy from Seton Hall, has turned Villanova into an NCAA tournament contender. Brought some guys over from Maryland, and they are playing pretty darn well. And as we discussed earlier, might have the best point guard in the Big East. Thoughts on the job he's doing?
I'll make a claim. I think Kevin Willard is the perfect example of why a coach is so important in college basketball. Because you look at what the team looked like the last 3 years with, I mean, some of those teams had more talent. You had Cam Whitmore on that team the
Oh,
first year.
there's a guy.
You had Justin Moore, you had Eric Dixon, you had a lot of talent.
Had Justin Moore for 8 years.
Oh, and then you look at what Kevin Willard did as soon as he showed up. I believe in at least the major American sports, college basketball, the coach is most important to his program, or more important than any he is in any other sport.
If you're listening to this podcast at this point, you are a diehard Big East basketball fan or Tri-State fan. This is going out to this is a PSA to all Big East teams. Make the coaching change. It's not going to get better. He's not going to change. He's not going to stop cheating on you. Make the change because goodness gracious, I don't know what they thought was going to change from year two of Kyle Neptune to year three of Kyle Neptune. And I get that they wanted to have like loyalty and they don't want to turn it over every year. But look at the difference between year one of Kevin Willard and year three of Kyle Neptune. And Kyle Neptune had almost the player of the year for the country, you could argue, like the leading scorer for the country. Like, give Kevin Willard that. We could be talking about a Final Four, Elite Eight type team. I just make the coaching change. It's not getting better. It's never going to get better. Make the coaching change and go hit a home run in the hire.
And you can turn it around in 1 year. You
Yeah.
don't need, oh, I need 3 years to get my guys in here. Shaheen Holloway did it in 1 year, literally 1 year. So Ed Cooley, he's not on the hot seat, but he better win next year. Kim
Absolutely.
English, would you make the coaching change?
Yep. See ya. Respectfully, haven't won at Providence. Haven't you won at Providence with Devin Carter? And yeah, and you didn't even make the tournament that year. See ya.
Awesome guy. Awesome guy. We've had the chance to talk to him. We've been in rooms with him. We've asked him questions in press conferences. He's a really good dude. I would like playing for him, but he's not a good basketball coach at this point in his career. Or
Agreed.
not good enough for the Big East.
Last team, Shaka Smart. I respect him a great deal. There's no coaching change going on there, guys. No way. But he has to learn to maybe, I don't know, use the portal.
Yeah, this was his big year. This was the test of his philosophy. You know, can I make it work without Cam Jones, without Tyler Kolek, without Osei Ighodaro? I believe that my philosophy is better than everybody else's philosophy and all these, you know, relationship growth, victory, catchphrases that he has. And it has obviously it's fallen flat on its face. Couldn't have really gone any worse for him. A lot of even people who were negative about them didn't expect him to be this bad this year. So I think that at this point, the biggest thing, the biggest story in Marquette basketball program, it will be once the offseason starts, does he get people out of the portal? Is he doubling down on his philosophy? Because if he is, you could see the end of Shaka Smart's tenure potentially coming up. Or is he willing to change his philosophy, go back to the portal, just like he did when he first showed up and got Daryl Morsell and Kirk Wess and Tyler Kolek? I respect him, just like you said. He's a hell of a basketball coach. He seems like a great mentor. I would trust him to coach my son. I think he teaches a lot of great life lessons. But part of the job is winning basketball games.
My other issue with this is, and I know that Ryan and I have argued about this a lot, online, offline, and everything in between. You can have a down year. Like Creighton is currently having a down year. They lost their all-world player, a name that'll be retired. And Marquette's coming off a hell of a run. The double Big East championship, making the tournament of this, as a small school in Milwaukee, they're doing all this. You can't be DePaul levels of bad when you have your bad year. That's my frustration. And it hurts a conference because Marquette, it doesn't matter beating Marquette. It's like a Q3 game right now. It hurts the program perception, in my opinion, especially when you're a small school like that. And I just think it hurts the credibility of what, a lot of things that we're trying to do as a conference when you go from being a good team, or even if you were in the 80s in KenPom, I'd sit here. They're like one of the six worst teams in Power Five basketball. I mean, we're talking about like laughing stock and like DePaul levels of bad.
That's even worse for this Marquette program because the whole idea is there's not big turnover every year, right? So if he doesn't change that, he's just bringing out the same guys who are gonna, finish 150th on KenPom or whatever the heck they're gonna finish. So it's different. Like, Shaheen Holloway obviously had 2 wins last year, but he brought in a ton of transfers. So yeah, I mean, this season can't end soon enough for Marquette and Marquette fans, and it's all about what does Shaka do?
What does he do? All eyes will be on him and Marquette, certainly. Guys, this has been a lot of fun. I broke out the Cheers bar behind me. I thought you'd pull up a bar stool too, but no problem. I'm at the bar by myself. When we get together, okay, and I'm going to the Georgetown Seton Hall game, we'll get a beer then. How's that?
Sounds
Okay.
like
Yeah,
fun.
man. But before you go, prediction on how many Big East teams make the tournament and which ones?
I'll go five. I go UConn, St. John's, Seton Hall, Villanova, not in that order necessarily. And then I think what I think still McDermott figures it out and Creighton wins enough games and has enough name it recognition to get in. They go 12-8 in the Big East and they get in.
I'm pessimistic. I think this is the worst the Big East has been in a long time. I'm saying three. UConn, Seton Hall locks, and either St. John's or Villanova, but one of them loses to one of these terrible teams and it tanks their resume.
Oof. I'm going four. I'm gonna say four. I think Creighton's on the outside looking in. I think they had, that loss at home to St. John's
St. John.
worries me. So I think Villanova and Willard will get in, and me, UConn will be a one seed, and the others will be, St. John's will get in. St. John's, Nova, Seton Hall, 7 to 9, as high as six, but that's gonna be tough. And UConn's the one seed. That's what I'm going with. All right, gentlemen, we'll see how we do at the end of the year. And we'll be talking to each other on Twitter and texting. And this has been a lot of fun. Really appreciate you coming on.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
You're
You're
the
the
best,
best.
Brian.
All right, a lot of fun with Tyler and Ryan Cassidy, Big East Barroom. Give them a follow on Twitter. They know their stuff. They love their Husky hoops for sure. They live in Connecticut, but they also know their Big East hoops, as you could tell right there. So we'll see what happens. Can't wait for Seton Hall and UConn. Something's got to give. Will Dan Hurley finally get the gorilla off his back, or will Seton Hall continue their mastery over UConn at the Prudential Center? Big one for St. John's as well as they take on Marquette. You have to win that game at home against Marquette at MSG. So we'll be watching that game as well. And that'll do it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. My thanks to you. Don't forget to listen, download, and share the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast wherever you listen. And I want to also thank my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you need to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth and Ocean Counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577, and tell him, as always, that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Until next time, everyone, enjoy the games. So long.